This is All of It. I'm Kushan Avadar in for Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending part of your eclipse day with us. I'm so glad that you're here. Here's what's on today's show. We'll talk about loneliness and what to do about it. We've got a live in-studio performance from the group Tiny Habits. Opera singer Rachel Willis Sorensen joins us to preview her Carnegie Hall debut. And we will send you into the eclipse with a conversation with someone who's watching it from the path of totality at Hot Springs National Park in Arkansas. That's the plan. So let's get this started with filmmaker Alex Garland. Civil War is a new film from writer-director Alex Garland. It's a disturbing picture of a hypothetical future. The United States government is fighting off a secessionist revolution. The president has resorted to fascism. Forces from Texas and California are close to breaching the Capitol. But despite what you may assume, the main focus of this film isn't the machinations of war or the politics that led to it. Instead, the film centers on a group of journalists who would risk everything, including their lives, to tell the story. Lee, played by Kirsten Dunst, is a veteran photojournalist who's captured conflict around the globe. She and her Reuters colleague Joel are determined to make it to the White House to interview the president before his government falls. The already very dangerous journey is made even riskier with the passengers they pick up. There's Sammy, a New York Times reporter who comes with them, despite being slow on his feet and past his prime. And then there's Jesse, an eager young photographer desperate to make her start. Lee doesn't think Jesse is ready for the horrors ahead, but Jesse comes anyway. They journey through a country, our country, torn apart by war and violence, and the audience is left wondering what happened to get to this point, and also why on earth these journalists are willing to die to get the scoop. You might know Alex Garland's sci-fi work in films like Ex Machina and Annihilation. For Civil War, he is the writer and director, and it's in theaters across the country this Friday, and he is joining us right now. Alex Garland, welcome to All of It.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Pleased to have you. I read that you started writing this movie in 2020. What was the moment for you that sparked this story in your mind, that kind of propelled you to put pen to paper?
Oh, I think it had been growing for a while. I think really all around the world, there was this strange space we'd got into, which was one in which countries were becoming very divided via populist politics, and that the way that populism just naturally drifts towards extremism. And there was that side of it certainly happening in my own country, happening in yours, around Europe. You can see it in the Middle East and Asia and South America. It was really across the board. And concurrent with that was a kind of reframing of the way journalists were seen. I'm in my mid-50s, and when I was growing up, journalism represented something different in the minds of the public than it does now. News journalism in particular was reporting, and it had a big emphasis, a sort of self-conscious emphasis really, on being unbiased. And because it put that big emphasis on being unbiased, it was easier to trust. A journalist would say, "This is what I saw," effectively, and that would kind of be the beginning and end of it. Clearly, journalism had changed a lot. It had become much more biased. Large news organizations had rather embraced bias, and that changed the audience's relationship with journalistic institutions, but that meant also journalism across the board. And then I think also politicians exploited that by really leaning into it and going out of their way to further undermine journalists, because, of course, journalists are the great check and balance on corrupt politicians. So it's in their interest to undermine journalism. So that was the context. It wasn't exactly, there was a specific moment, but I did think that populism, extremism, division, lack of trust in the media, had all were reaching a critical mass state, and or maybe a just pre-critical mass state. And so I wanted to make a film about it.
And it's interesting because you're right. You see examples of that all around the world, like you said. And it's especially interesting to think about that juxtaposition of what journalism might have been few decades ago versus now. You see that especially, I would say, in America. You use the word trust. I think that's a key word there. Was it always America, the United States, that you're going to base the story in?
I was always going to base it in America just because America is the biggest, most powerful, most influential country in the world. And everybody looks towards America in one way or another. Some people might do it with hostility or envy, and some people might do it with admiration, but we all look in this direction for one reason or another. That's not really true in my own country. I would say all of this is as true in my own country as it is anywhere else. Maybe there was a sort of trigger point to do with my own country, but I see it represented here as well. We elected a prime minister, a guy called Boris Johnson, who was evidently lying. He was manifestly, clearly lying about all sorts of different things. And the press were pointing this out. They would often point it out, but they had absolutely no traction. It didn't affect the way Boris Johnson was perceived. And that was quite strange to observe happening in my own country. And I can see that happening in other places too.
The idea of truth also comes into that idea of being vague about politics, which is one of the first things you really strike, at least struck me when I was watching the movie unfold. You seemed intentionally vague about the politics of the situation that we see unfold in the movie. We know that there are secessionist forces from Texas and California allied against the U.S. government and the president. But as we travel around with these journalists, it's often really unclear what side people are on, what they're fighting for, what's motivating them. Why did you want to go that route, to be vague on the specifics?
I would slightly take issue. It's very clear on some specifics, but it's vague in others. Mm. There's lots of reasons for that, but one of the reasons I could give is that at a certain point, the specifics stop mattering. It is just a state of warfare of one sort or another, which could be with guns, or it could be with words, or it could be with alienation or whatever it happens to be, but it stops being in a way issue driven and it just becomes anger. But at the same time, I also felt this is partly to do with the period of time I sort of arrived in the film industry, where it was for a long time absolutely obsessed with clarity and spelling things out. And it involved a kind of, I thought, a sort of, and not just me, lots of people thought, a kind of patronizing view of the audience, which if you were going to really reduce it, it would reduce to they're stupid. That would be where it ended up. And I don't really believe that. I'm not alone in thinking that. I don't want to sound pious, but I really just genuinely don't believe it. What I felt was that a lot of the things that the film seems to be vague about at times are things that people already know. And it's not really based on where they might sit on a political spectrum. They'd actually agree, yeah, sure, that would be the underlying cause why this happens. I might agree with that or disagree with that, but I would accept that this is why we have ended up in the place we've ended up. So I just didn't see the need to spell it out. But on top of that, I think it helps to not spell it out, because in some respects, the film is trying to act like the reporters it admires, which is to remove that kind of bias and simply say, this is what happens within this window of events. That's it. And old-fashioned news reporting tended to be that. This was the sequence of events. This is what happened. And you, as the receiver of the news, make your own inferences and interpretations on that sequence of events. And that was part of the contract, which involved trust. And I personally, big believer in and supporter of journalism and the media, I think it is as crucial as things get within a stable, free country. And so the idea it's undermined bothers me.
And that framing that you just put of the film itself trying to act like, in some ways, the journalists that it depicts, yeah, I think is crucial in the sense of what you choose to leave vague, where you go into specifics. I appreciate you bringing up that distinction. I think that it adds a lot to the film. Especially while I was watching it, I thought, oh, wow, agnostic in some ways, much like what the characters that Kirsten Dunst is playing, for instance, is propelling. That's super interesting. If you're just joining us listening now, we're talking to Alex Garland, writer-director of the new film Civil War, which is in theaters this Friday. Alex, since we're starting to get into that role of journalists, I thought the depiction of wartime photojournalists, very compelling in the movie. What research did you do? Did you speak to reporters before going into the process of making this film? How did you approach that?
Oh, well, I grew up around journalists, which is probably why I have a bias towards journalism. But probably my dad was a cartoonist on a newspaper. That was his job. And newspapers have very few cartoonists. They might only have one. And so his friends, his colleagues were journalists. And I just literally grew up around them. They were around the kitchen table. They were who he'd go out for a drink with or socialize with or would come home. And my godfather was a foreign correspondent. My brother's godfather was a different foreign correspondent. So I was used to being around them and not just hearing their stories, but also something about their personalities, which is they could be, they could be spiky. They could be sarcastic. They could be sort of compromised and conflicted as individuals, but they were also very serious about one element of their work, that element we were just talking about. They saw it as having a kind of societal function, and they would have felt offended about the idea of including a certain kind of bias within the work in a certain kind of way. They would have felt that was inappropriate to the job they did. And so they were very careful about it. And hearing them, it was interesting, like the split you got between the conflict they might feel as individuals and the nature of their work and how they manage these two sometimes opposing forces. What you were left with was something a little bit like you might feel about a doctor, a surgeon in A&E, who might themselves be quite traumatized by what they're doing, but they switch that off at a certain point to make sure that they perform the operation or remove the bullet or apply the tourniquet or whatever it happens to be. And so you had them as humans, and you also had their professional function and the way their professional function sat within a greater good.
We see in the movie time after time these journalists putting themselves into, to borrow your phrase, traumatic experiences, but they keep coming back. It's amazing to hear you say you grew up around so much journalism and the spectrum of personalities. What makes someone want to throw themselves into danger like this? It sounds like you might be saying it is the societal function and the importance as they perceive it to be. Is that fair? Other parts of that, in your opinion?
I think that is often in there, but it can be personal ambition. It can be that they're driven in ways that other people are not driven. So they don't have the same relationship with risk or danger that other people have in terms of being frightened off doing something. All of those would be quirks of them as individuals, which sometimes their societal function might sit almost coincidentally alongside the drive that they have. It could be ambition. It could simply be getting a scoop because that's part of their ambitious state. And one of the things about the system that we live in that has been so incredibly eroded is that they would have a set of checks and balances on them as well. So they would be providing a check, a journalist provides a check and balance against a government, which might become corrupt, as many, many governments do, or many politicians do. The journalist would also have an editor, and the editor would be part of an institution, and the editor would be making sure that the journalists sit within parameters. And it might be the editor where that societal responsibility was most seated and where that power was most exercised. But they took it really seriously. They were apolitical, in a way, that meant they could say something about politics that had a very clear inference, but they themselves were withholding their own political position on it because it allowed them to criticize any government, hold any and all governments to account. That's a crucial difference from today, basically.
And I think Lee's character has a line in the movie, if I'm remembering correctly, that really touches on this. There's a line where Lee, who's played by Kirsten Dunst, says that all of her photography of foreign conflicts have felt like a warning to her own country not to descend into violence. Of course, that didn't work. How do you think the fact that it's their own country, these journalists that you write about in the movie, and not a foreign conflict that shapes the way Lee and her colleagues are approaching this story?
Well, honestly, that thing relates more to the audience. Mm. And it's so it is to do with journalists. So what's my job? My job is to show this thing so that we don't do it. That would be a reduction. And then within it, she's saying, but here we are, which is saying journalism has lost the traction it used to have. It's lost the ability to hold people to account in the way it used to have that ability. It's been very diminished. But it's also directed at the audience because it would be an anti-exceptionalism statement. The reason why we have the governments we have with their system of checks and balances and why we have journalism being a check and balance on the checks and balances, all of those things, they're not arbitrary. They haven't been created for fun. They're there to guard against something. They're there to stop states becoming extremist. And if you remove the guards, you remove the thing that will stop you moving towards extremism. And nobody is immune from that. Your country is not immune. My country is not immune. If we were immune, we wouldn't need the system of checks and balances.
Absolutely. And I think anti-exceptionalism, as you're describing it, the United States seems like a perfect place to place this story in that sense. Is it also part of the reason why maybe the film is particularly violent? You don't shy away from gruesome images. Is that a similar, it could happen anywhere, choice for you, or is that just the reality of war as you were describing it in the movie?
I have to say, as someone who's not American, I actually, in a way, I sympathize with the exceptionalism because America is exceptional in some respects. It's just not exceptional in others. Mm. Exceptional as in not unique. So the problems that could apply to somewhere else could also apply to here. And so it's not surprising that it's confusing because America does actually have some things about it that are unique. So who wouldn't, as it were, get confused about that? I think everyone in a way gets confused about it. But I got hung up on the exceptionalist part of your question and I missed.
Absolutely. And I'll accept the compliment that you just said. Exceptional. Really appreciate that. Not unique, of course, but I appreciate it on behalf of the United States. It was violence part of the leaning into violence. Was that part of it as well to show the reality?
Yeah, because what really, when one says you have a system which is there to protect you against extremism, what's the problem with extremism? What really is reductively the problem? The problem is violence. The problem is human rights getting violently abused. And what you see in all authoritarian countries is murder, torture, state murder, state torture, repression of the rights of individuals, imprisonment for political views. In fact, what's one of, if not the most evil things people can do is clearly genocide. Mm. Genocide almost feels like a natural product of authoritarian thinking. Mm. So there's really good reasons to not go down that route. And the sharp end of those good reasons is violence. So if you're going to, and then there's a separate thing, which is to do with the film, which is if you're going to show it, you need to be thoughtful about how you show it. And it can't seem too romantic or adrenalinizing or fun. It has to be actually rather kind of dismaying or brutal.
Grounding almost. There's one scene that I think of specifically, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a scene in this film with the actor Jesse Plemons, which is an absolute standout. And reactions from filmgoers and critics indicate that that was a moment that really stuck with them when you're talking about the reality? And of course, adrenaline was a part of it. Without giving too much away, is that what you were hoping to achieve with that sequence, that idea?
The thing about that that would be to do with the anti-exceptionalism thing. The thing about that sequence is the thing it is showing is something that you can expect to find in war zones. Mm. Not that a war zone might at its worst end up like this. You can absolutely categorically expect to find that scene playing out. So it would be almost like disingenuous to avoid it.
Yeah. From a filmmaking standpoint, the other element that I really wanted to get into was the sound design, which struck me especially. Lots of different sound elements playing here. One specific one with world building, where a handful of moments in the film went, I felt at least like you were playing with the sound of gunfire. You hear gunfire a lot in the movie, but there are these specific scenes where it seemed like you were highlighting sounds that are a lot like gunfire, but much different in nature. So you have footsteps of children running while playing. You have the sound of a sprinkler system on a lawn. It felt like there was a lot of dichotomy in this movie, you know, Texas and California versus the US, but also gunfire versus children running, playing. Is that a fair summary? What were you trying to achieve with that dichotomy if it was in fact existing in the movie?
But the thing about, there's two things about gunfire. One is that it is in a way an alien noise. It's never, in a way, something has gone wrong if there is the sound of gunfire in that context. I mean, all right, if you're hunting deer, that's different. But in this context, the sound of gunfire is a kind of disturbing arrival into whatever else is going on. It should not, as it were, coexist with the sound of a water sprinkler in this kind of context. So there's that. But the other thing we did, and this relates to realism, is we thought a lot about the sound of gunfire in terms of what it actually sounds like, and not playing certain kinds of tricks that one can do within movies, which is to add in elements within it, like sub bass, to give it a special kind of resonance, which is partly what leads you down the road towards action is fun, action is romantic, action is exciting, which is great in certain kinds of movies, is totally appropriate. A lot of what you hear in the gunfire in the film is very carefully recorded gunfire itself, as opposed to a fictionalized version of it. So we're using what was recorded on the day as much as possible. And if we're having to replace something for one reason or another, it's just an authentic sound without being supported within itself by things that give a kind of almost unconscious subtext of coolness to it.
Polish almost is what I hear you saying. Like
it's polish this... and that sort of the fun of movies.
Speaking of it, so a lot of that sounds like showing it authentically as if you were,
that's the attempt. That then alongside the sound of children playing, it has the authentic stark abrasion that you want it to have.
Of something shocking. Is wrong, like you
so
were saying.
Something is wrong and gunfire is itself quite shocking. I mean, there are things you can't show in a film, like if a really big gun, like a 50 caliber gun, is firing and firing and firing, there's actually a tactile quality if you're standing near it because of this, I guess, the concussion effect of the air around the sequence of explosions that happen. You can't get that in a film, but what you can get is its shocking quality to an extent. So, we tried to do that, yeah.
So as we think about all of these authentic displays of what could be the dangers, the realities of war, I think in the last few years here in the U.S., especially in the wake of January 6th, the idea of an armed rebellion has felt like a terrifying and frankly not entirely out of the question possibility. I think for some viewers, this film could on its face seem triggering or potentially harmful, but I would say that after having watched it, this is firmly an anti-war film. But how were you considering how this film could add to the discourse surrounding political violence here in the US?
I think it's a really good question, and I don't have a glib, easy answer for it. I think that the implication of everything you're saying is true, and I think it would reduce to, is it wise to tell a story like this in this kind of way? And the honest answer would be, I don't know. It's almost impossible for me to know. I'd have to know too many other things to be able to accurately answer that question that are just not available to me. But what I do know is something else, which is I know the counter to it. I know about silencing. I know what happens when people silence other people or when people silence themselves. And that has more known qualities about it. Silencing people is problematic. Silencing people is dangerous. So I don't know the answer to the positive, but I know the answer to the negative. Yeah. And so that's the one I stuck to. It would not be wise to not talk about these things.
And
not talk about anything. There is nothing as a subject matter that one should not be allowed to at least discuss.
And what I found interesting in other interviews that you've done so far about this movie is you've said that what you're most interested in is not lecturing, but having a conversation. And these are conversations that are very difficult to have. So as we're wrapping up, what does a good conversation in this context look like to you?
A good conversation involves listening. It absolutely involves listening. And I think that in public discourse, listening has fallen away in favor of stating and asserting without really a concern about whether anyone is listening except people who already agree with you. I feel oppositional to that. So the key to a good conversation is listening.
Well, it's been a pleasure listening to you and watching this movie. We've been talking to Alex Garland, the writer and director of Civil War, which is in theaters this Friday. Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.